You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler, and on this occasion, I am joined by Mr. Craig Anderson. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad yourself?
Yeah, good. Just looking forward to commenting on a league above for the first time in my life. So,
yeah, that's true.
I had a wonderful day out down at Palmerston on Saturday, so it's not all bad.
As wonderful an evening as you had watching watching Killy beat Ayr.
Yeah, well, both good. I think the Ayr game was a bit of a we controlled that completely, and you know, you score and then you kind of think it's a win, and obviously it's a bigger one. But it was the last minute goal on Saturday probably made that better, because it didn't really seem like it was coming, and then you get the excitement of that, and that's been something that we've missed for a long time, obviously, has been able to celebrate goals like that. So, thoroughly enjoyed that celebration and was kind of living off it all the way home. So that was good.
Fair enough. I'm still, of course, riding the high of seeing my team win two top flight games back to back, which has got to be for the first time. I've not looked into it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's the first time this century. It's got to be close. In fact, no, it will definitely be the first time this century, because what was it? I'm trying to, the years all just blend it. What year are we in now? 2021.
I don't think it's the first time this century, Craig.
Top flight it will be.
No. You won the first six games or something.
I'm thinking this decade. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was getting at. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's not this century.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, this decade. Yeah. Right, century and millennium are the same thing. So yeah, we've definitely won. One point we won 10 of 11, so that was fun. We also had that run in 05, 06. But yeah, certainly this decade, it will definitely be the longest run. And without looking, I'd imagine it goes right back to the start of the 2018-19 campaign, but I've not looked into that. But that would be my guess, the last time Hearts won two consecutive top-flight games. Anyway, we'll talk about that. Hearts winning in Paisley and the rest of the top-flight games this past weekend after this. The return of football is always worth celebrating, and Beer 52 are generously offering free beer while you watch your team from the comfort of your own home. Or if you just want a few to get you in the mood before you head down to the local ground, as we're now allowed back at the stadiums again. Yes! They're offering 8 craft beers sourced and created from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/terrace and just cover the $5.95 for postage. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club, with over 150,000 members that they send a brand new case to each and every month. Every month's case has a different theme. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, all over the US and Europe. If dark beer is not your thing, you can simply choose the light option, and your case will come with an award-winning beer magazine, Ferment, and a tasty snack. Don't worry though, if you change your mind, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. Just go to beer52.com/terrace to get your first case of 8 beers for $5.95. That's beer52.com/terrace. Okay, let's begin with Rangers, because it feels apt this time. They've lost their 40-game unbeaten league run. It's actually quite rubbish that you go an entire league season undefeated and your end tally mark is 40. two more than how long a season finishes, but that sums up their kind of form towards the end of the season that was then halted by the pandemic. And they've not started this campaign well either. Defeat by Malmo, followed up by defeat by United. They've got Malmo again tomorrow evening. They just need to win. Well, they just need to win by a goal to force it into extra time. Need to win by two on the night to win the tie, unless it goes to penalties. Not in an ideal position. Something that I think a lot of us still would fancy them to get out of. But they're going to have to play a lot bloody better than they did on Saturday, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's when you've got a big unbeaten run like that, you don't really want to lose it in a whimper the way they did, really. You know, you think of Arsenal's kind of famous one, at least it was, you know, that game at Old Trafford, and it was drama and it was excitement and stuff like that, whereas Rangers lost theirs in a kind of just a piss-poor performance against a Dundee United team who are not really being tipped for very much, but to be fair, played very well in this game. I do think saying it's coming was maybe a bit of a stretch, but I do think since probably December, January time, Rangers have not really been at their best. I think it's obviously hard. They just had absolutely no pressure in the second half of last season, and that's when it's interesting, because a lot of their fans, you know, I can't remember who it was, said if Celtic hadn't been such a basket case, they would have pushed Rangers for the title, and the Rangers fans were kind of pointing at their points tally and saying, well, look, we were unbeaten. It wouldn't have mattered what Celtic did, but they didn't go under any pressure. There was no pressure applied to them at any point last season, and therefore it's one of those things. If Celtic had been a bit better, would they have lost a lot sooner, because their form dropped off, but nobody really gave them a game, whereas Dundee United finally, I think, turned up. There was a lot of energy to their performance, and I think that's the way you beat them. It's not quality, it's just energy, just running about and just you know, getting in their faces as well, which is what they did, but they did it with a fair bit of quality as well when it was needed.
Yeah, and I think the kind of key instigator in getting in their faces, Joando Fuchs, was somebody who had a outstanding match at doing that in both the centre of the park, but also kind of getting forward, breaking forward from there to put pressure on the Rangers defenders. There was a number of times where United forced Rangers into kind of knocking the ball out of the park or having to rush it long, because United were so up and on top of them. And full credit to United for doing that. They also defended pretty well throughout the game. Charlie McGrew, I think, had a great game in defence. Not only his distribution, as you've come to expect from him, but just in the he had two very key block shots within the first, I think, 10, 15 minutes of the game that if he's not there, if Rangers take an early lead, then chances are that it becomes quite a comfortable game for them. But the longer the match goes on at 0-0, the more that you start to believe in yourself, as we saw happened. And you also get the fact that Rangers start to panic a little bit, start to struggle for ideas. But they kind of struggle for ideas with the exception of the opening 10 minutes, where you kind of looked like it was going to be maybe more of a kind of routine Rangers performance. United were still kind of given a hell of a lot at the other end. There's still a lot of running, a lot of kind of impressive energy coming from the hosts. But the Rangers were still carving kind of opportunities up, and you thought they'll get one soon. They'll score, and this will be another notch for Steven Gerrard's side. But not long after that, United kind of tightened things up a little bit in the back four, and that's something we should probably note as well. The fact that they moved away from the three at the back, that they've pretty much, in fact, sure they've used it exclusively in the league and the Premier Sports Cup games they've played so far. I think that probably helped matters as well. Also helped them get the kind of guys supporting Clark able to kind of put the pressure on the Rangers defence and the three in midfield, who were all, I thought, all played very well as well. I mean, I mentioned Fuchs. I thought Hearts Hark's also had a really good game, Butcher done his job. And yeah, credit, full credit to United for this one. I don't know, I still don't know how much it tells us about their season. I know it's a weird thing to say, but with Shanklin sitting out, and you have to wonder, there's been a lot of rumours this week of him leaving. If Shanklin is going, you are really seeing a lack of quality up top. They can certainly, they've showed there that even with the switch from Mellon to Coates, that they are fully capable of battling out and grinding out results when need be. And they showed the kind of pressure and intensity that was really lacking from the game against Aberdeen last week. And if they could do this on a consistent basis, then Tab Courts would be fine. However, I don't think they're going to finish too high up the table if Shanklin goes, because it's still, you can be still evident for this game. Nicky Clark up front on his own, flanked by Chalmers and Pollitt. It was kind of the ideal game for those kind of guys. The guys who are just going to do a lot of running, work tirelessly, show a little fear as well. Peter Pollitt's always been somebody happy to take the ball and run with it. Logan Chalmers is the kind of same. Nicky Clark is somebody that's always kind of had that kind of cocksure, gallus kind of Scottish attitude. This is the kind of ideal game for them to kind of not be bowed by the opposition, to get in their faces, to do that. What remains to be seen is whether this United team can do it against sides that they're going to be pressure. The pressure's going to be on them to try and break them down. And that's going to be interesting. And I still think they need some more new faces in the door for that to happen. Although there are rumours of faces coming in soon enough. But yeah, so what do you think? I mean, we were quite critical about United's chances this season. Has it made you change your mind at all about them going with this campaign?
I think in terms of, you at least see that the players must be to some extent buying in. Well, you can say that. It looks like the players are buying into what Coates is trying to do, which is always a good sign, because I think that's, to be honest, 80-90% of the battle half the time is if the players want to play for you, then at least you're going to get performances out of them. But at the same time, I think we discussed it. Ian Cathro beat Rangers. Alex Dyer beat Rangers. It doesn't necessarily mean that a manager's going to go on and be great. I think the point you made, it was all the performances that were good for United were grafters. So you talked about the midfield three as well, Fuchs, Harks, and the Butcher. They're all players who like battling, they like getting in people's faces. You saw that from Harks, he was really high up the park winning the ball back. They played a similar midfield against Celtic Hearts. Unsurprisingly, Celtic Hearts didn't really need to get in Celtic Hearts' faces, and they couldn't create anything. So it will be interesting to see where is the creativity in the team going to come from. And it's a totally different battle, but there was definite massive positive signs for them there, in the sense that they were playing for the manager, the energy levels were great, there was solid defending, there was bits of quality. As I say, it wasn't loads of quality, but there were times, I mean, even the finish from Robson, really nice. It's quite a well-worked goal, and he hits it quite early. I think McLaughlin's kind of taken by surprise by that. And all those little bits are things where you go, right, these guys are capable of something. And so it's got to be a massive positive, because they were so meek against Aberdeen last week, and you thought, is this, you know, are they just going to do nothing? Are they just going to be neither exciting to watch nor solid, and they're just going to lose a lot of games? But when you saw that, the excitement's not really been there, but they got the performance for the game that they needed. But as you say, it's a totally different challenge when they play someone else.
You mentioned lack of creativity. I don't think we'd say that about Rangers in a lot of games, considering the balance of riches they had. But after kind of causing United a lot of bother in the early going, with Aribo looking lively, Morelos having a couple of chances, didn't do an awful lot for the rest of the game. And once United went ahead, you weren't entirely surprised that they managed to see it out, because Rangers looked so flat. And I mean, I wrote an article about this that was out yesterday, so I've kind of, but I mean, assuming a lot of people reading this, sorry, listen to this, wouldn't have heard it, so I can just go over some of those old points. It's definitely a problem with having John Lundstrom in the team, because he, so far, he's not been what he's advertised is supposed to be, which is somebody that's supposed to be providing the kind of, another guy to basically do the Arfield role, but somebody that's 5 years younger, somebody to kind of break through the lines, bring a lot of energy to that midfield three, bring a bit more balance, because you've got guys like Davis and Kamara who can hold on to the ball a lot and do the simple things. And against United, I mean, this was the first really opportunity I've had to see him, but from going from what I've heard Rangers fans say about him and some of the other competitive games I've had so far, this is the early worry about him, is that he's to me, he looked like somebody that was kind of trying to do a similar job to Davis or Kamara. And you just ended up with these three guys that were too far away from the forward line, not impacting the game enough. The amount of times as well, like Lundstrom would get the ball and he would just check back inside and give the ball back to either Golson or look for Davis or Kamara and not try and kind of push the either push the tempo or even... And you could say, well, maybe that's not his game. Maybe he needs one of them to carry the ball and him to do the work off it. Even then, he was usually just kind of staying in his kind of rigid shape on the right of midfield, which is fine if you're doing your defensive work as well. And he wasn't. It was him that lost Robson for the goal. He'd done that a few times where he just really wasn't tracking the runners. I know you're not a huge fan of him, having watched him in the English Premier League. I haven't watched English football the last couple of years, so I have no idea about him. But to me, he looks right now, considering what he was advertised as. He's somebody that right now to me doesn't look familiar, doesn't look comfortable with his surroundings, doesn't look familiar. He's playing very much within himself and not doing what he was supposed to bring to this midfield. And unless he's going to do that before Tuesday, I would rotate him out the side.
Yeah, I thought like when he played for Sheffield United, he was fine. He was the games that I saw, because I probably watched more English football with the lockdown and stuff like that than I had previously. And he ran about a lot. He was, you know, For a mid-table team and then subsequently in the second year, a team battling relegation very badly, he was a good player for that. But I found it very strange when Rangers signed him in the first place, because they've got Davis, they've got Kamara, they've got Jack. I know Jack's out injured just now. Those three players, Kamara maybe, but none of them are probably going to leave. And so I didn't really see why they needed a fourth to do the same type of role. If they wanted to sign a midfielder, I would have thought it would have been a more attacking one. And I think we've talked about this before. The one problem they have with their midfield, I think, is in Scottish Premiership games, they have a tendency to maybe be a wee bit cautious in the middle. Not to maybe, you know, play Aribo as a 10, for example, and just have two guys behind them.
With Jack Kamara and Davis. I mean, it's a great midfield for playing away to Porto, but playing away to Livingston, it's not quite the same. Yeah.
And it led to them having... Not much link between the midfield and the attack, not as much as we normally have. And it wasn't helped in obviously a horrible situation going on with him, but it wasn't helped by the absence of Roof, because I think he is more likely to make something happen. You know, he's Morelos obviously does as well, but having that option might have helped them just in terms of someone who will come and get the ball, do everything. Roof, I think he's a kind of all round striker, but nonetheless, there was just a real lack of flair, a lack of creativity. Again, is this not the type of game where you start right? And we came on for Lundstrom with 20 minutes to go, but someone who will run with the ball, because I thought Wright was superb in, against Malmo from the bit. I didn't see the whole game, but I think I saw the second half, and he was the one who looked like everything was coming through him. And so maybe they're keeping him for Tuesday night, but I would have thought this was the type of game where he would have excelled for them. There were question marks, and I think a lot of Rangers fans and I think a lot of us probably thought they were going to cruise to the title this year, but having watched Celtic, and I know it was against poor opposition, and having watched them, I think there's going to be a bit more of a fight than they maybe were expecting.
Yeah, that's certainly what we want. And it's funny you get to that, like, it's a couple of weeks into the season, and it just seems like completely different. Oh, it's completely different from last week. You just thought, oh, Rangers are literally going to just absolutely title. Me and Joel said that the show is the title over after one game. Is that it done? And then all of a sudden they're level on points, and you're kind of this question marks about Rangers. I mean, I'm still reckoning that Rangers are going to win this title. I think there's just maybe too many holes in that Celtic squad, and Rangers will iron out these problems. Because another factor as well, I thought with this game, you're right about Scott Wright, by the way. Rangers looked better down that side immediately after he came on, and he probably should have been on a lot sooner for that very reason. But I don't want to just pick on Lundstrom, because on the other side of the field, everybody was rubbish. Kent was invisible. Barisic was fairly placid. Kamara didn't have a good game. So your right side's already a wee bit blunted with somebody who's still trying to fit his way in the team, and then your left side was just poor in general. So given all that, the fact it's Morelos' first game of the campaign as well, he looked lively but rusty at the same time. And you're basically, it's kind of, there's a wee bit of a perfect storm going on. They didn't have the most ideal of summers. And a Rangers fan I saw made a very good point as well, where he says that in the past three seasons under Gerrard, they've all been in very early to hit the early rounds of European qualifiers. and they didn't have to do that quite so early this campaign. So I wonder whether it's just kind of throwing the team and maybe the management staff as well out a bit of a rhythm, and whether how to judge guys that are not quite up to match sharpness or what fitness levels are like, and you know, things of that nature. Because it does seem like that's affecting them a little bit, because it's still some of their bigger players aren't really kind of showing up as well. And so, and that kind of going full circle, bringing back to your point, that's why I do think they will be fine. I think they'll sort this out very soon, but it's whether they sort it out soon enough to defeat Malmo, because that, if you really want to hammer home the complete change in the Scottish football landscape from last season that happened with Celtic giving up the 10, being a complete shambles, failing to qualify for the Champions League for now the fourth season in a row, really hammer home that kind of complete instant change by Rangers making it to the Champions League. And also as well, they've talked about having to sell players. Stuart Robertson said that last year, they need to make more for player trading. They won't have to make that much for player trading if they make the Champions League. If they don't, then you can see maybe one or two guys who might not have left leave the exit door. And then things might start to get a bit more interesting.
It's a very favourable draw they've ended up with as well, if they do get through. So I think I think you're right, they can lose to Dundee United and it's fine, it doesn't have a big deal. But if they don't beat Malmo, such a huge missed opportunity. Malmo were not a very good team. We saw that the other night. There was nothing to fear. Rangers last year would have thumped them. And then it looks like potentially Ludogorets will play in the next round. Potentially, that's not confirmed. But if they ended up playing them, again, I don't know much about them, but if you're talking about having a Bulgarian opposition rather than, you know, Greek, Turkish, whatever else you could be playing in that round of the competition, that's massive. So I think this is a huge game for them on Tuesday now, and they need to get that. Yeah, if you're talking about, you know, they're not in the rhythm yet, they need to find it very quickly, or at least, I mean, and having 50,000 folk behind them will probably help, but they need to get their act together. To think this, as you say, these two games could set them, or these two ties in Champions League could set them up for the next 5-6 years if they play their card right with it.
Right, let's move on to the next game, and let's go to Celtic. Okay? Let's have the old form at the top for a change. Right, they defeated Dundee 6-0. Yogo Furuhashi, he looks all right.
Yeah, I was really impressed by him. I thought he was really good against Jablonec the other night as well. I kind of got, when I obviously don't watch much J League, but when he came in, I got the impression he was going to kind of be a wide forward, and maybe he still will be. But he's played almost like, I wouldn't quite call it a false nine, but it's nearly a false nine, because he's quite small. He's not really a target man, but he finds himself in so many good spaces, and technically he looks absolutely superb.
For the second week on the show, we're going to call somebody a 9.5.
Yeah, but I don't even think that applies to him either, because if you're talking about Harry Kane, he doesn't quite play like Harry Kane, because that's who I've ever heard that used about. But yeah, it's hard to pick. Yeah, he almost is... he's almost like an old-fashioned inside forward, but playing further in. But I don't know what that makes you. Maybe that does make you a false nine. I don't know. Anyway, regardless, he's a very technically gifted player, but also his intelligence is what stood out for me a lot here. He scored 3 goals. He genuinely could have scored about 6 in that game. The chances he missed, the first one he missed before he scored was probably, well, it wasn't the best chance he had, because he'd 3 basically tap-ins, but it was one that you should score, and he had another couple kind of blocked and saved and things like that. He just picked up so much space, and again, maybe it's Dundee, maybe Dundee are just not very good, and their defending certainly suggested that, but at the same time, most teams in the league aren't very good, so if he keeps doing that, he'll score a lot of goals and he'll create a lot, and that partnership that he seemed to immediately strike up with Christie. I mean, Christie had a tremendous game with some of the passes. It's kind of back to peak Ryan Christie, which I've not seen for a long time. And there was so much quality in that performance from him. And if that's what they're going to get from him, then he's a snippet, whatever it was he paid for them. They paid for him, but...
$4 million, I think.
I think it was something in that region. But obviously, again, the test will come against better opposition. I don't remember him doing much when he came on against Hearts, for example, in a different scenario, of course, but it will be interesting to see, because on that basis, he looks like he's going to be an absolute dynamite player to watch.
I was far too steep in the Hearts game by that point to correct you or confirm what you said. I thought, it's funny you mentioned that chance that he had, that he missed before he'd even scored, when he gave the nice kind of interplay with Rodgick, I think it was, is that that's why it looks like he'll be, I mean, it's easy enough to say as well after he scored a hat-trick in his first league start, but it looks like just for that moment, it kind of epitomises why he's going to be fine playing as a, in my opinion, why he's going to be fine playing as a central striker in Scotland, despite the fact he's like 5'7" and built like the, and not, you know, well, for his size, he's not badly built, but I mean, when you're 5'7", you're hardly going to be a wee tank, are you? And I think it showed that because he made a great run. He used his body well to hold off the attentions of, I think it was Jordan Marshall coming in for left back. And that's the kind of thing, you don't necessarily have to be physically overpowering. You just need to know how to use what you've got. And I thought he did that kind of well, just kind of stuck his arse into him, shielded the ball away, got himself that space to attack. Then there's excellent technique, as you spoke about, for the flick. That technique's just going to solve him really well. And then just the positioning to get him right into the ideal scenario to receive the pass for Rodgick and have a shot at goal. These all things are going to mean that he doesn't have to be a 6 foot, you know, whatever guy. And Celtic are going to play the ball on the deck a lot of time anyway. So if he's just interlinking with everybody else as he has done, then he should be an excellent addition to the league. Certainly shows that. I loved his first goal as well, I have to say. The determination and intelligence to know that he has to get in front of the defender, and he just absolutely sprints as well. Something you don't see players maybe do an awful lot is that he properly goes all out to get in ahead of Ryan Sweeney. Ryan Sweeney had a torrid day, yes, trying to just mark him within like the 6 yard box. He was the other bit of a shocker. But yeah, Celtic were very impressive overall. But this should be the caveat though of how bad Dundee approached this game.
Yeah, it was really naive from McPake. It's not the first time you've seen a team, kind of newly promoted team, and obviously it's hard because there's probably a little bit of a sense around Scottish football that maybe Celtic are vulnerable at the moment and can be got at. So you're obviously a little bit tempted to think, or you know, could we go there and, you know, go toe to toe with them and play them off the park? But Hearts didn't do that. Hearts, I thought, I saw you and a couple other people were critical of how Hearts played last week, but I thought Hearts got it spot on in terms of like it was almost a bit rope a dope. It was just kind of get deeper and deeper and suck them out, and then Hearts were used the ball well when they had it. There was none of that from Dundee. It was so open. It was so like, you know, here, you're 10 times better than us. Please have the ball. Please play around us. Let's do that. And I don't know how he thought it could possibly work, but
it wasn't just that. It was also the fact that they played like kind of a higher line than most teams would at Celtic Park, but didn't really put any pressure on the ball. It was like, is that no kind of coaching 101? Like, if you play with high line, you have to really put pressure on the ball. Otherwise, it's too easy for them to play behind you.
It was maybe it really didn't want to go to Milton Keynes. So it was just like, too many roundabouts. But it was really poor from Dundee. And again, they're not going to be, their quality of their season is not going to be judged. I think they'll actually be all right this season, but they're not going to be judged on that. But certainly they can't go to Celtic Park and Ibrox and play like that. They probably can't even go to Easter Road or Pittodrie and play like that, because they will be battled.
One of the most battled things as well was just not even put a man on Callum McGregor. Like, McGregor dictated everything, but he was basically allowed to. Like, every time he picked up the ball, he always seemed to be in a pocket of space where there was like, you could see four Dundee players around him, but they were all at least 10, 15 yards away from him.
It was when they were getting overrun in the midfield, and I thought, right, they're going to take Charlie Adam off, and then they brought him Luke McKeown, and it's like, he's a winger. I don't think that's how you're going to. There's just a lot not to like from Dundee there, but I think it's a mix of how bad they were, but Celtic, and I think, to be fair, the results haven't always been there or weren't there at the start with Postecoglou, but you can definitely immediately see what he's trying to do, and it's a totally different style of football from. And it's kind of, if you talk about the cheesy kind of Celtic way of the way Celtic want to play and expect to play, that is it. I mean, that's kind of what I think the sort of traditional Tommy Burns style Celtic football was. But Tommy Burns wasn't ultimately successful, and it'll remain to be seen whether he is.
Won the first trophy in like 8 years or something.
Well, he won the trophy. He didn't do what he was there for. He didn't win the league. And Janssen probably played the same sort of way. Nonetheless, if that's a bit of a sidetrack, I think one thing I wanted to point out is Tony Ralston. is he good enough to be Celtic's first choice right back? No, he's not. But I'm now starting to think maybe he's all right to hang around and be a backup if they bring someone else in, which I would never have thought I would have been saying. He gives away a lot of fouls. His crossing's terrible. he gets himself into position. I'm definitely a believer in terms, and we'll talk about someone else later on who's in the same category in a different game. Players can get better no matter what age they are, and no matter, you know, when a different coach comes in, someone that's just more suited to how they want to play and how and makes use of their abilities. And you're already seeing that with him because he's got into two really great positions to score goals where if he was playing under Neil Lennon, he'd have been asked to hug the touchline. He would have been nowhere near the penalty box for either of those goals that he scored tonight. Again, I appreciate they were already 4-0 up against Dundee in this one. But getting in field, it seems to actually suit him, I think, because he's always got lots of options. I always felt when he's out wide, he can't cross, like I said, and he looks lost. He doesn't know what to do with the ball. But when he kind of drifts in the park a bit more, it's like he's got options on his right and his left. So he's always... It feels like he's now got a decision to make where he can actually do something, whereas it just looks like when he's out stuck in the wing, he just very often will turn back and pass it to somebody. And it lets him run a bit, and I think that's probably what he's quite good at, is running with the ball, or just making runs in general. And so it'll be interesting to see what does happen. I mean, they surely are going to sign a right-back, and they surely should sign a better right-back. But now you look at him and think, do you know what? Maybe he's not as bad as we've been saying for the last 3 years, and maybe he'll be wrong, and maybe he'll you know, immediately chuck in three goals against Jablonec on Thursday night. But I am starting to be won over a little bit by him.
And speaking about previously kind of forgotten Celtic talents, Tom Rogic scoring. I did like the reaction of a Celtic fan. I don't know if it was in any way connected. I kind of assumed it was, but the pad to the crowd, and I'm pretty sure you could see about four or five people just kind of laughing, like the Tom Rogic had finally kind of done something of note in a Celtic shirt again. And with him, obviously, Postecoglou will know him from his time with the Australian national team. I don't know if Rogic would have been much around the squad back then, but...
He was pretty much the star player. So
was he? Right.
Yeah, he was.
I try to remember when Rogic first kind of emerged.
I went to see an Australia game when I lived over there, and he was a manager, and Rogic was, he was the main man in the team kind of thing. So very much... They played like two number 10s behind a striker, and he was one of the two. So he was very much so, and that's why I was surprised, and I thought the writing must have been on the wall for him when Postecoglou came in and he still wasn't playing. I thought that he's obviously, his time's up, and I still think it is, but it was good to see him back on the score sheet.
Right, let's go for here to Almondville. Livingston 1, Aberdeen 2. Last minute goal from Jack McKenzie, if you give it to him. He took the shot, and Max Drake threw it in. That was after Teddy Jenks had tied up Bruce Anderson's opener. What did you make of this one?
Livingston were all right. They were better than I thought they were going to be, but at the same time, they were better than I thought they were going to be at spoiling. They didn't do a lot. I expected a wee bit more from them on the ball, and they didn't really do it. And Aberdeen are probably better than I've been giving them credit for as well. I think all the games I've seen from them this season, I thought, you know what, Glasses seems to have them doing the right things. And so I watched them the other night against Breidablik as well, and it was the same. Defensively, they look a wee bit shaky, but when they've got the ball, compared to McInnes's kind of style, they're much more on the deck, much more using wide players, using through the middle, kind of they're much more energetic. It's a lot harder to predict. It's maybe back to that very first McInnes team in terms of style, which never was really replicated again. But I thought it was quite an entertaining game in general, but three goalkeeping mistakes for three goals, so I don't know where I know where he stand on that first one, but I think Lewis should just be taking bodies, and he doesn't. And then obviously the third one goes without saying, but Jenks' goal as well, I think it's a mistake from Strijek as well.
Lewis should either be staying put or coming with a bit more authority than he does. He kind of gets lost a little bit in between the two. And I want to give Jenks credit just for the first one, because it was a well-hit strike, and the final one, obviously, it's just an absolute shocker. And does put questions over Streak going into the rest of this season, because I always wondered if he was a little bit overrated just by not being... Well, I didn't always wonder. I thought he was better to start with as well. But kind of towards the end of the season, when I kind of had a look at Streak's kind of campaign as a whole, didn't really make that many impressive saves after his debut against Rangers. And the fact that Martindale kept going back to McCrory. Now, usually when... I mean, sometimes it's just managers being complete fannies. But often there's a reason behind it. And you had to wonder whether Martindale was just seeing in training that McCrory was better. And if there was any... Like, so therefore he'd forgive mistakes made by McCrory in games than he would by Streak, who was kind of harshly punted out the side after he made them a mistake in a game against St Johnstone and then conceded three goals at Tannadice the following week, none of which were his actual fault, but then he was kind of bombed out again. And it took a while for him to get back into the side. But it does make me wonder whether he's actually that good or he just made few mistakes last season and he just wasn't as error-prone as McCrory, and that's why he looked a better goalkeeper. So there's certainly question marks about him. Question marks. The other question mark I have about Livy, and this goes all the way back to starting 11, to see Obi Lai at the heart of the defence instead of Parks doesn't say a lot for that particular signing. So Obi Lai, I saw a couple of times last season played for Queen of the South. For what I've saw of him, he looks much more impressive as a defensive midfielder than he does as a centre-back. If you were looking at him as a centre-back playing for Queen of the South and saying this guy's going to be in the Premiership next year playing at centre-back, you'd be what's happened to cause this? So it's a little bit worried that the kind of the replacement, what seemed to be the kind of tailor-made replacement for John Guthrie, coming from a similar level of English football, similar style of player to Guthrie, if they're not convinced by him, then that already makes a questionable defence even more of an issue. And
yeah, I mean, they lose a bit for their midfield as well, because I think I thought, yeah, some places.
I guess he was kind of bigged up as the Marvin Bartley replacement, with him kind of taking a step back into more of a coaching role.
Because I thought that when I saw him playing defence for Queen of the South, I think it was a couple of times last season, he looks a bit shaky. And then you saw him step into midfield and then you thought, oh, this guy, you can see why Livy want this guy, because he was very, very good in the midfield. And yeah, it's been weird to see him drop back in there. And there's a lot of weird, I mean, it was kind of an in-between formation as well, because I feel like Longridge was sometimes playing left-back, sometimes playing left-centre-back. It felt a wee bit like they didn't know if they were playing a back three or a back four at times as well, because Penrith was kind of up and down and everything. Their shape wasn't exactly what you kind of come to expect from Martindale, which is that you at least, you know, where people are and stuff like that. And what I would say to their credit, though, was that all the kind of classic Livy things of spoiling the game and, you know, not giving opponents time, they mostly were good at, but a lot of the other things that you do still need to win football games and which Livy were good at, they no longer have, which is, you know, when they're on the ball, doing things with it, and when, you know, defending when they have to defend, defending well, because the Aberdeen had other chances beyond the goals as well.
And yeah, to look at Aberdeen a little bit more, I think it was, yeah, you could see before right at kickoff that Glass was shaking up the team. They've played now three European matches, so they're obviously going to be a wee bit more, going to be a few more tired legs than they will be in the teams that aren't in Europe, like Livingston, so he's freshened it up a bit. Calvin Ramsey came out of the side, as did
Scott Brown.
Brown was out as well. They also removed Ramirez. He started from the bench. And Jenks started. So Lewis Ferguson was out, as was McCrory. So a number of changes to the kind of what is be typically looked upon as their strongest side so far this season. They did have Ryan Hedges coming back to start 11, in fairness. But there was a lot of things that didn't quite work. I think Jack Gar was okay, but he wasn't the same as Calvin Ramsey. Terry Jenks in the centre looks like he's got something about him. He's a bigger guy who can looks like he'd be quite a strong runner, kind of good driver of the ball. Sure that he's got a decent hit on him. Don't think him and McGeoch work together too well, although, I mean, it's the first time playing with each other, that might get better. But I think you saw that in the build up to the goal. It was a Longridge's chance, which was saved for a corner, and then they scored from the set piece, but that came about from McGeoch and Jenks just not being on the same page in the centre of the park. And you also saw as well up front, J. Emmanuel Thomas being asked to do the kind of Ramirez role instead of the kind of number 10 role he's been playing. I don't think it really... It's weird to say because we thought of him as a forward going into this, but the way that they've managed to blend together those two at the point of the Aberdeen attack, I thought Jett was trying to do his usual kind of game and come deep, and there wasn't really anybody to go beyond because the other player playing beside him was Niall McGinn, who until the second half didn't really get into the game too much. And yeah, so there was just a lot of all the kind of pieces that fitted together so well when we first saw this Aberdeen team in the previous couple of games just didn't quite function with a few of them taken out. Is that a bit of a concern? Yes and no, I suppose. I still think they do need another striker. And I think this game highlighted that you want, like whenever either of Jett or Ramirez come out, I think you want somebody else playing on the shoulder because they can both do that hold-up role. And that's how it manages to work because they've got all these runners and they've got these two guys that can hold up. But at the same time, it's mainly Jett can doing a lot of the holding up and Ramirez looking to play on the last shoulder. So if you can get somebody with a bit of pace, because I still think that will be an issue as well when you're facing certain teams as the season goes on, then that would be the kind of ideal addition for Aberdeen to bring somebody in like that. But at the same time, a few teething problems, but you know, it's a new system. It's a very kind of attacking system. It's a very fluid system. And you're trying to integrate new players into it. You're going to have these kind of issues early on.
I think centre half is an issue for me with them, though, to be honest. I watched every game I've seen, to be honest. I don't rate McCrory. I know you don't either rate McCrory as a centre half. Now, he's perhaps slightly better. This is a more general point. He obviously wasn't playing at all yesterday, but I thought he was really poor against Breidablik. I just don't think it's his strength. I know they've tried him at right back a wee bit as well, but I think he's more than capable in central midfield in this system that they're trying to play. I know why they want a ball player at the back, which is why they've kind of kept putting him there. I think they need a better ball playing centre half, and I think they need to bite the bullet and only play one of Gallagher or Considine, and probably it's Gallagher. Gallagher was getting stick off the TV commentator, which I couldn't really quite understand for. He picked up the ball at centre-half, ran 40 yards. Nobody was showing for a pass, and he eventually turned and tried to play a difficult pass and gave the ball away and was getting stick for it. And I didn't really understand it, so I'm wondering if the knives are already out for Gallagher a bit. But there's been nothing. I thought for that, he was trying to make things happen. He was trying to drive the game on. But in general, centre-half, I think, is potentially a problem. I think full-back... Ramsey looks good enough. Gar, we saw yesterday.
Maybe it's okay as a backup.
Yeah, he's not technically great, but he's a runner and he tries hard and all that stuff. McKenzie looks fine. Obviously, I mean, the goal, 90% of the time he's getting pelters from his teammate for trying that shot on his weak foot, which he's never going to score from, but for the goalkeeper making a mistake. But he gambled and it paid off in this particular time. And obviously Hayes is another option at left back, I think. And that's concerning, I guess, for Europe going forward. Was Hayes going off injured yesterday? And they'll be hoping that's obviously nothing major because I think he's an important player for them. I'm actually more positive about Aberdeen than I was kind of in the summer, having watched them play a few times. I think Glass seems to have built something nice, and I think Ramirez is much better than I expected he was going to be as well. So I think they would do well. Obviously, one of three teams sitting on maximum points at the moment. They probably won't win every single game this season. I'll put myself on the line for that one. But I think they probably are going to. They might not have as good a season in terms of where they finish as they've sometimes had under McInnes, but I think it'll be a more exciting season.
Right, so let's go from then to another team that looks very impressive, but probably still won't win every game. That's Hibs beating Ross County. 3-0, they were up. This game's done within, what was it, 35 minutes or something?
Yeah, I decided when I was watching this, I thought I'm just going to watch up to that goes 3-0 here, and then I'm not going to bother with the rest of it.
Yeah, I done the same and then watched the highlights on Sports Scene, and apparently I didn't miss anything.
all I missed was trying to see how good Jack Burrows and Harry Clark were for Ross County, and I thought I can live without the knowledge of how good they are for one more week.
I'll check them out next time. County's system, like, let me just, this is great. So we ripped to the Malky Mackay for years.
He's also got a baldy patch coming on, which is
he's put a lot of weight as well. Yes, this is great. So, yeah, we're going to get to rip it on him for being a shy manager, because he certainly was for this game. Playing 3-5-2 against this Hibs side. Sorry, Malky, you're not being paying any attention at all. They've got, especially with, I mean, maybe they didn't realise that Doig was coming back, fair enough. But still, Doig and Jamie Murphy on one side, Paul McGinn and Martin Boyle on the other. Against a team outside the Celtic or Rangers in this league, you're going to struggle to get better than that. Like, two guys that are, like, four guys who are just excellent on the wings. And you protect that by having, playing 3-5-2, having just wing-backs following them the entire game and trying to stay on top of them. And it was so, it didn't really play much part in the first goal, but it was so obvious how big a part it played in goals two and three. The second goal, McGinn has all the time in the world. Like, he's about 40 yards for goal. There's nobody putting any pressure on me. Standing about 10 yards of space. You just look up, sees Jamie Murphy coming short on the other flank, switches it over to him. Doig goes long. So because Doig goes long, Conor Randall, who's playing wing back, goes with him. That means that Jamie Murphy's got about a 15-yard head start. Gets going, beats one man, gives it to Doig, ball goes in. Somehow nobody marks Kyle McGinn. It's just wandering to the edge of the 6-yard box. I think that was Harry Payton's fault, for what I could tell for the replays. And then you also had the third goal, where kind of similar to the second, this time, again, McGinn in loads of space. This time it was because Martin Boyle had attacked the penalty box, Regan Charles Cook, who was playing on that side. And by the way, try to get Regan Charles Cook and Alex Iacoviti as a double team to try and stop Martin Boyle. Fucking what? So McGinn again left loads of space. This time he crosses himself and puts on the head Doig, who sneaks into the corner. I did want, for the replays, you couldn't really put any fault on them, but I did wonder whether Laidlaw could have done a bit better, because I was a wee bit surprised they went in for the initial angle. Like, it didn't seem the most powerful of headers. I kind of expected the goalie to turn it around the post, and then it just went in the back of the net.
It's right in the corner. I mean, I'm not a big Ross Laidlaw fan, but I think, as you said, there's probably 8 or 9 other Ross County players you can point out before him for that goal. But I know what you mean. I think a better goalkeeper than Ross Laidlaw would save that, but I'm always going to, don't want to be too critical of a goalkeeper when he just doesn't make a save, because he's just not good enough to make it compared to him actually being a mistake.
You would have seen one of my favourite moments for this game. do you remember in the old days of FIFA and Pro Ev, when players, the gameplay wasn't quite good enough yet for players to just kind of turn from one direction to the other? So we were trying to turn, so you can turn and run round a player by kind of doing it in steps. Like, you can run straight for 5 yards and run straight, and then run straight and run straight. And each time, just slightly change your angle, and he'd kind of go around them in a big loop. Martin Boyle done that to Iacoviti. It was fucking brilliant.
I never made my mind up last season as to whether Iacoviti was any good, and I really still haven't. Like, he's got some strengths, you know. And
I think he's okay in a two. On the left of a three, no.
Well, I just think I don't understand. And they did it last season as well. Regan Charles Cook isn't a wing back as well. They signed him. He was meant to be an attacking, like quite a creative attacking player. And then he seems to have been, it's almost like they've went, right, you're just not good enough as a creative player, but we've got you on a contract. Let's just get you in a position where you can do some running.
I forgot exactly it.
I mean, surely if he was that highly sought after in England when they signed him, as he was supposed to have been, surely someone else down there will take him back off your hands and just cut your losses on him, because as a wing back, I mean, when Paul McGinn's giving you the run around, you know you're in a bit of bother. I actually thought, like, for County, I don't mean they started well, but they were in the game up until the goal. They had kind of wee half chances. They were up the park a bit. I mean, the chance, but it was mistake from both centre backs. So first of all, Hanlon tries to play his way out of the corner, gives it away, and then the cross comes over, and Porteous completely loses Jordan White, and it's a free header which he should score.
And they were attacking, you can see they were attacking with numbers in that attack as well. I think there was six County players in or around the box.
And that's a big chance, because you go 1-0 up and it's a totally different game.
I'm still going to say they would have got murdered by playing three at the back against that Hibs team. I hadn't seen the goals. I was like, okay, first goal's got nothing to do with that. But I was like, surely goals two and three, at least one of them is going to be down to this, because this makes no sense.
Possibly it turns into eight at the back, do you know what I mean? And then it becomes harder.
I suppose that.
But after that, the fact that they conceded 3 goals in 11 minutes was always a big, massive alarm for me, in terms of that's a collapse, and it's bad enough collapsing at any point, but in your second game of the season, why is the manager not just going, you know, when they go 2-0 down, right, just see out to half time. We'll sort out half time. We'll change the formation. We'll try and get back in it at that point. Instead, it was just they just got more and more open. They got ripped to shreds again. And I mean, yeah, as you say, there's a number of players at fault individually, but the fact that you can concede three goals in such quick succession always worries me for a team, especially a team that are already being tipped as not being very good. There wasn't a lot to like about Ross County in this game. And I mean, maybe the new Hamilton in terms of they just look shite all season and somehow stay up, but you're already...
You're really giving County fans something to hope for.
Yeah.
It's your best case scenario.
It's hard. I mean, Hibs are a good team, so you don't want to... Yeah,
Hibs are a good team, but crucially, this is a game that Hibs really struggled in last year. In fact, they actually lost the County at home.
And I mean, they know they've also got Hibs are at least half going to have their mind elsewhere with this game. Yeah, their team lineup didn't reflect that. They definitely didn't.
Except for Nisbet.
Yeah, that's what I believe, leaving him out. But bringing Doig back in, all that type of stuff, it wasn't like they took the game lightly. It wasn't like they rotated as many players as you know, some St Johnstone did, for example. But they've got a massive game out in Croatia. And in some sense, he's like, Ross County gave them exactly what they wanted, which was to let them just ease up in the second half and not worry about it.
Yep, boost their confidence.
Whereas if it was still 1-0 at half time, maybe they start worrying about injuries. Maybe Ross starts withdrawing players and things like that. And it was bad game management as well, when that comes down again to the fat baldy manager.
Right. Let's move on to our penultimate game. Let's go to Paisley, where Hearts recorded a 2-1 victory over St Mirren. Goals from Andy Halliday and Liam Boyce, and a late header from Joe Shaughnessy, because it couldn't have been simple enough just to see the game out 2-0. No, I had to concede a free header from about 4 yards to give St Mirren a bit of hope.
Hearts do have a punch on for that. It really does seem like something that, you know, I know everyone says, oh, our team do that quite a lot, but It does seem to be a big thing for Hearts. You'll know better than me, but it looked mostly comfortable for Hearts. Like, definitely a deserved win, and lots of good performances, especially kind of the bottom half of the park, if that counts, the defensive half of the park.
Yes, John Souter was excellent again. I think he had the most, something like tied for the most progressive passes in the league this weekend. Craig Halkett won absolutely everything. I'm starting to wonder whether, because he played well against Celtic as well, and anybody listening to the show knows I am not a huge Craig Halkett fan. I was when he was at Livy, just not in a Hearts shirt, but I do wonder whether his powers could have come alive in a three at the back rather than a two-man centre-half duo, because that's, since going to that formation this season, he's looked a lot better than he looked a lot better than he did the league below. So, I mean, that's there's got to be something in it. Started again with quite a... I mean, maybe Hearts are just going to try to do this all season. They wouldn't be necessarily that pretty to watch, but and we'll get the fans on Nielsen's back eventually. But I suppose if you're getting results, especially picking up away wins, which is something, that, and especially in Paisley, where Hearts have only... It's the first, I think, league win there since 2010. And the first win of any sort in Paisley since 2012, since the Scottish Cup quarterfinal replay, where Jamie Hamill and Scatchell scored. That somehow managed to finish that one 2-0. But the lineup, very similar to Celtic. In fact, the only change from the Celtic team was that Kingsley, who was injured, dropped out to be, or was it L? I think it might have been L, to be replaced by, God, I've blanked now. Hayden.
Yeah,
it was Hayden. Cochrane went back at the back three. Halliday went to left wing back, and Heron played in the centre. And I thought Heron and Benny made a very good kind of partnership. I think that's something we'll see a lot in away games. Well, they're also supposed to be bringing this guy as well. Is it Cameron Devlin? His first name. He's, I think, another kind of similar type of player for that. So maybe that's something that Nielsen's looking at doing quite a lot. And like I say, it will be quite handy in away games and games against Hibs in the old form. and probably Aberdeen as well, when you're looking for your midfield to be more stoppers and to stop the other team from playing. We know that Heron's good for that. Benny's already really looked... I'm not even trying to pronounce... attempt to pronounce his surname yet. I've not heard that enough. So he's Benny for now. And he's a kind of similar player to Heron. And I think there's Cameron Devlin coming in similar as well. Somebody who's just very good at winning back position for your team. And then that gives you the platform. I'd still like us to see... I'd still like us to play with kind of better attacking quality at the wing-backs. I wouldn't mind Halliday playing there for a bit while longer. I think some of his best games in a Hearts shirt have come when he's either played left-back or left-wing-back. I think as a centre midfielder, he doesn't really offer an awful lot. He's really just kind of getting through on that on reputation alone. But out in the wing, he kind of... Because we do have to kind of remember as well that Halliday started his career as a forward/winger. Like, yeah. He used to score quite a lot of goals. So I think he has that kind of sense. And even when he did that job for Rangers, I thought he'd done it okay on a team that was kind of going for the title. So he definitely has that in his locker. And I'd like to see Nielsen use him out there more than he would in the centre. But then, yeah, and I'd also, Michael Smith, I mean, every Hearts fan loves Michael Smith, but I think he's about to turn 33. He's never been the... He's been a dependable guy going forward, but never been the most exciting. And I'd also like to see Hearts go a wee bit more kind of attacking out there at times as well. But it's clear that Nielsen's plan at the moment is just kind of build this solid base and trust that the front three can kind of basically go win you the game. And Boyce was exceptional. Mackay Stephen was kind of his usual in a Hearts shirt. Josh Dinelli didn't have a good game, but then Nangeli came on and he was excellent. He really held the ball well, gave Hearts kind of foothold when they were kind of struggling to do so.
So I was going to ask you about that in general, and you talk about the back three, and I think what you're seeing is Cochrane stepping in. Kingsley can play both as well. You've got Smith right wing back and obviously could play centre half as well. What do you think of Dinelli as a right wing back? Because I thought that might be something that they would try a bit, because I think he's obviously very direct, but get him a bit further away from goal, which I think probably suits him. He's got more chance to run at people defensively. In a lot of games, he'll be all right. Do you think they need another wing back, or do you think he can?
Good question, actually. You could probably do another one just because Smith could cover so many positions. Like, Smith could also play centre midfield as well. Yeah. Like, Smith could go anywhere. So if you're having Smith going anywhere and you're playing at home to somebody and Ginelli's injured because he spent most of last season injured, I'd still like to see Hearts bring in somebody else in that position. It does seem though that Nielsen is kind of really prioritising the defensive side of it first before really adding a lot more. But he obviously has maybe a lot more faith in guys like Jamie Walker and Gary Mackay-Steven and Nangeli more than the kind of average fan does, I think, at this moment in time. Should probably talk about St Mirren. In fairness, I thought that they did play... After Hearts could have controlled a lot of the early going, St Mirren came back into it a bit. I think Power had a no-bad game in the centre. So far, he's kind of looked all right, I think, in a St Mirren jersey. I know that he was somebody we kind of worried about coming into the season, given the fact that he looked so poor for Kelly, and you wonder just whether his legs had gone. I think it's just maybe one of those... I mean, he's not going to go on forever. I think he's, what, 34 now? And... So the time is going to come soon when he falls off a cliff, but he's maybe not fallen off that cliff just yet, and it's maybe just an example of somebody joining a team that's a bit more highly functioning than the Kelly team was last year, and then obviously looking better due to that. To do with St Mirren.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Kelty's not really made the best start there, but I'm not necessarily surprised. I think we talked about this, that it didn't seem like the right destination for him. I think there are other teams in the Premiership he could have done better at, but they look like St Mirren, they look like a team that I've got absolutely no worries about them being anywhere near the relegation zone this season, because they've just got too many good players for that. And unlike when you say a team's got too many good players, but they're all old, they're not. They've got a good kind of age mix and stuff like that. I do think trying to rely on Curtis Main and Eamon Brophy as your strike partnership, we are not going to score very many goals. I think they could do with something a bit different.
Like, I don't know. I've still got a wee bit of faith in Main to help turn Brophy into the 15-goal-season striker. He maybe has in him.
I think they need a creative player next to him, and he would be great. But I think it's what Goodwin wants. That's how Goodwin plays, and you know that. And so he's not going to change it, and probably nor should he, to be honest. But I think there are games like this where a wee bit extra quality, they could have taken something from the game, but they don't really have it. And
or if they hadn't, they gone down to 10 men immediately after scoring.
Literally immediately after. And it's one of the funny ones because players get away with that all the time. I think it's a red card, but players get away with that all the time. But yeah. They blindside somebody and the ref just doesn't see it, basically, or doesn't have enough confidence that it's deliberate. But it's just really... If you at least need to disguise it a wee bit better in a different phase of the game or something like that, not immediately after kickoff when all the focus is on you.
Certainly, I'm getting a bit worried. Like, someone not going to throw it. Oh, no, I didn't see the referee. Because as well, Rob was at the... No, sorry. I should definitely make that clear. Rob was not at the game. Rob was doing commentary for Hearts TV, but they were doing it from a studio. So they were just watching the same pictures as the fans. So you've seen they were watching highlights of the goal, and then you just immediately switched to Don Robertson just walking with a red card in his hand, but then putting it back in his pocket, and then like just switched to Christian Dennis walking off the park. It was like, what the hell has happened here? Most welcome,
it was a strange weekend for players receiving red cards, kind of questioning it, and then just walking off. Like, if Jordan Marshall did the same thing, because. I think he was surprised it was a straight red, as was I actually. It wouldn't have mattered because he'd been booked anyway and he would have got a second yellow, but yeah. It was the same with Dennis. It was like, oh, you're going to send me off for that? And I suppose I can't argue too much, and then just walked off. But yeah, it did chuck away any small chance they had of getting back in the game. McGrath seemed to be involved again. I think he's someone that, when you talk about the creativity, but he's I always say it's like predictable creativity. He's not going to do much that you don't expect, but he does it well, if that makes sense.
It's his cross for the equaliser. No, he did have a good game as well. It's a man one bad. They kind of paid the price for a really kind of slack opening 20-odd minutes where Hearts kind of commanded the game, scored a goal, and then that gave Hearts something to hold on to.
And an error for the goal. Anik shouldn't be letting that go through him.
Oh, yeah. That was very poor. Right, let's move on to our final game. I didn't see this one. That was St Johnstone against Motherwell. One each. Tony Watt levelling up late doors after Stephen O'Donnell own goal had given St Johnstone a first-half lead. What was this game like?
Yeah, it was quite an entertaining game, or at least decently entertaining. It wasn't as bad as St Johnstone 1, Motherwell 1 might sound. St Johnstone will be disappointed for the second week running, maybe for the third game running, that they've got a draw when they probably will think they should have won. Motherwell were very much in the game, but once St Johnstone went 1-0 up, Motherwell fell out of it for a while. It wasn't really until the change bringing Watt on for Connor Shields that they kind of got back into it. But St Johnstone, as they often do when they go 1-0 up, had control of the game, and you really thought they were going to see it out. But I think they missed. They didn't have Jason Kerr. He was hopefully rested rather than injured or anything like that.
It seemed to be similar in this bit. He said he had a knock, so it's kind of one of those ones. Probably play if they didn't have a massive European game coming up.
Hayden Muller was playing in his role, and Muller actually looked quite good. I was quite impressed by him. Got himself into a lot of good positions, but was found wanting for that goal. You see the ball. Gordon's probably a bit at fault as well. Watt lays the ball out, and then he gets it back, and he's just completely unmarked in the box. And then they had a chance. It was Watt again 3 or 4 minutes later, where again he manages to get a free header that time and just stuck out. I think it was over the bar. So they'll be disappointed in the sense that I think they had control of the game and they just weren't able to be as solid as they usually are to see it out. So St Johnstone are very good. I don't want to get away from that. They look every bit as good as they were last season. Glenn Middleton's back. He really seems to be confident there. He had a good game. May had a good game at doing what Stevie May 2.0 does, which is everything but scoring goals. The midfield is solid. Rooney was kind of doing, you know, he's winning headers at the back post and everything like that. For Motherwell, it's very hard to get a gauge on how good they are or otherwise. Lamy and McGabby, to be fair to them, I think a lot of their fans have been worried with that back too, but we're fine. O'Donnell, Motherwell, it just doesn't seem to work. I mean, I'm not blaming him for the own goal. I think he's reacting to a ball coming over someone else's head, but he doesn't get involved in the game nearly as much as you've seen him do for Kelly or for Scotland, in fact. Shields, I think he was wasted. He was kind of playing wide of Van Veen most of the time. I think Connor Shields at Queenly South was kind of on the shoulder centre forward, and he's too predictable to play out wide. You're not going to get anything surprising from him. Woolery was playing as part of the front three as well. What's the good things about him? I think he carries the ball really well. He had a really nice pass, I think, for a chance for Van Veen in the first half, but not convinced by him. Van Veen had some good touches, but I do think he's going to be a player that when he's on the telly, he's going to be absolutely brilliant, and then some of the rest of the time he won't be. And I think bringing Watt on was what kind of brought him back into the game. A guy that, just had a wee bit extra quality, and a wee bit unpredictability. But Motherwell will be a wee bit worried from that performance, I think, just that they went through fast waves of the second half where they just couldn't get a grip of the game at all. Liam Kelly dug them out a couple of times. It was two very good goalkeeping performances. And when I was talking earlier about Ralston and players improving regardless of their age, I think we have to start giving a bit of credit to Xander Clark, as much as it pains me to do so. And it only pains me because people have been kind of touting him for Scotland call-ups.
Yeah, it pains us because every time he has a fucking good game, everybody pretends that he's not been shit for like 2.5 years.
Yeah, exactly. And so when he was starting to get tipped for Scotland call-ups because he put a header into Chris Kane's path against Rangers, and that seems a bit... And then saved a penalty after it in the shootout. That seems a bit off, but to be honest, since then, he's been very good. I thought against Galatasaray, he was excellent. A couple of great saves.
He had
a phenomenal save in this game, down low from a header. He's 29 years old. He should be kind of coming into what I guess the peak for a goalkeeper is. If that is him genuinely got better as a goalkeeper, I don't see why it couldn't be, because you could be working with a better goalkeeper, sorry, a better coach. He's just more confident in yourself, more assured in your place in the team. All of these things could come together into just the fact that Xander Clark is now a better goalkeeper than he was a year ago or 18 months ago. And in that case, maybe you do start thinking he could be a third man in the Scotland squad or whatever it may be. But you obviously got a long time to see that. Kelly at the other end is one who I think will very soon be in Scotland squads because he's a lot younger. He's 25. He's already played a lot of games at the top flight, and he's shown himself to be quite a commanding goalkeeper. He's not at the same level as the current Scotland goalkeepers, but I think we may have to accept that we're just not going to have goalkeepers that good pretty well unless someone comes through. So it was two good goalkeeping performances.
Someday's granny.
we need to branch out a bit and maybe get a Spanish goalkeeper that's got a Scottish granny or something like that, because that would just change it up. But yeah, I think we have to, in particular Clark, give him credit, because it's not just a case of, you can say, oh, even bad goalkeepers make good saves or whatever, but he's been consistently good for a long time. He's had a very good 2021, and if he keeps that up, then fair play to him, and hopefully he keeps it up on Thursday night.
If you listen, Steve Clark, have a cast your net far and wide. There's got to be some boy out there who has knocked up a Benidorm-loving expat. Right, I think that'll do us for the main show. Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to check out the Patreon. We're going to talk about Vasilis Barkas said... warm up is one way of putting it. Just kind of standing in the goal frame.
Yeah, I think the word warm is not appropriate there.
And basically any other instances we can remember from our past of players just clearly not giving a shit. We've also put that out to people on Twitter who have responded with some very good shouts, so we'll be kind of going through those as well. So if you'd like to listen to that is patreon.com/terracepodcast. That podcast is going to be in the £2 a month tier. There are three tiers. There's also £5 a month. It gives you access to all the podcasts, and £7 a month means that at the end of the season they get everything that I've said above, and you also get a t-shirt and a fanzine. So that's us for now. Craig, say goodbye.
Bye.
And I'm Craig Feller saying goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.